Well, again, thank you for choosing to worship with us this morning. It is wonderful to be in the house of the Lord with you and to worship and praise our God. And as we continue in this sermon series, Life as a House, we are in our third and final installment of this series. We have been talking about God's grace and using the metaphor of a house as we talk about the foundation, which is for us as the Christian community, as followers of Jesus Christ. The foundation is the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is the foundation of our faith, the foundation of life together. Then we spoke about the front porch and the idea that this is God's prevenient grace that goes before us and draws us to attention to God and welcomes us, invites us into a response to God. And as we respond, we walk through the front door of the house, crossing the threshold that allows us to enter into the house, to transition from an outside into an inside space. And when we're inside, we are finding ourselves in a new transitional space, the interior rooms of the house. And that's what we want to talk about today. We have, in the course of this series, we have been in conversations with a couple of architects who are members of our congregation. We want to thank, or I particularly want to thank Dennis Carlisle for his conversation from last week as Kristen led us to consider about the front door and the front porch of the house. And we thank Dennis for his conversations and sharing his thoughts as an architect. Don Bowden has been with us as he offered his thoughts early on in our first installment of this series on the foundation and how we build up on top of this rock, this solid, firm base structure that allows the building and the house to resist and be not moved by the outside forces, but yet allow the built structure on top of that foundation to flex as it needs to flex. We're going to hear from Don Bowden again, and we sat down with Don this week to talk about the interior rooms, how the design of the house, the design of the interior informs us and how these transitions take place and what an architect looks for and dreams and imagines for a house. So I invite us to sit down in on this conversation that we had in one of our interior rooms here at the church, the church parlor. Now let us hear this conversation. When you design a house and you think about the interior of the house or the home, what is your basic goal in making that design?
Basically, to enable people to live the way they want to live. An interior is the sanctuary. An interior is a very personal space, unlike the outside of your house, the porch, or your yard. This is somewhere that you invite people into. So it should be something that reflects you, something that's comfortable, but also it should be arranged so that it makes your day-to-day living seamless, that you don't have to think about how you're going to work in the space. It's you. It's your space.
When you think about, again, about this overall design of the house, from the foundation up, is there a theme that is running through the house that you can tell that runs, brings continuity from the curb appeal to the front door inside, or does that even matter?
It does, and any design should have a theme. Any creative endeavor should have a theme. We would call it concept. So our concept would be, what will best reflect and enable the spaces we create, we don't really call them rooms, we call them spaces, to make that person's life easier, to make it function so that they interact with people the way they want to interact with them, and that there is a sense of continuity. You wouldn't want to design a very classical exterior and then put a Tudor interior. It would just seem out of whack. So we try to make sure that there is a seamless flow as you go through the space, and you're just building layer upon layer to make a richer and richer experience.
In your mind, as an architect,
What makes for a good interior design in terms of flow and usefulness?
Well, that would vary with the user, but I would think I have successfully done my job if they don't think about me again. It is when you get something wrong that they remember you and they're like, oh, if they'd only talked me into moving this door over here. So we try to really ask the right questions so that we can make a design so it seems natural, intuitive. If I've done a really good job, it intuitively answers all their needs before they think about what they need.
When you enter a home, what draws a person from one room to the next?
That would vary greatly based on the design of how the person lives. There are people that would want you to come into a transitional space, a foyer, and therefore they could say, okay, you're in my house, but you're not privy to my very personal space. Or there would be those that you open the door and it's like a loft. Everything is open. The biggest thing that draws you in is, like any design, the kitchen winds up the heart of the home, and how much space opens to that kitchen typically, or to the space where the family actually lives. You don't see as much the formal entrance and formal dining to the left, formal living to the right, because now people want you in and part of your life. You wouldn't be invited to the home if they didn't want to share their experience with you.
What is the most important space for you in your home?
Well, that's a good question. I think for me, my most important space is where I actually live and work. And it's kind of I could live in this one room, basically. It's where I sleep. It's where I have a Jefferson desk and I mark up drawings at night. I watch TV, that kind of thing. But if I'm entertaining, it is, I have opened my kitchen up to my living and dining space, and it has doors that open to the garden so people can seamlessly flow in and out. Because I think, especially in this climate, our outdoor spaces are every bit as important as interior spaces. In my own home, you enter through a garden before you even get into my house. So it sets the stage for, hey, you're welcome, and slow down. This is a one-on-one kind of interaction. So forget the street noise, forget the traffic. I want you here. Enjoy this space with me.
I love the ideas that have led me to think about differently about these structures of a house, structures that I typically don't think about. And unfortunately, I don't have to think about foundations of my house. You know, the foundation protects, as I said earlier, protects the building from outside forces by giving this firm base, but yet allows the house to flex as it needs to, as it interacts with the outside world. How the front porch acts as this transitional space between the outside and the inside spaces of the house, and acts as a welcoming and an invitational space. And then we heard about the front door and the threshold and how it acts as this strong barrier, but yet also serves to act as an invitation and an entryway from this transitional space of the front porch across the threshold, that barrier, and into the spaces, the interior spaces of the home. And now we've heard Don speak about how the inner rooms serve to invite people into the life of the home. When one is invited into the home, it is an invitation into the interior of the home, into the life that is lived there. It is these inner rooms where we live and we cook and we eat, we sleep, we read, we learn, we play, and we dream. Consider for a moment the notion of transitional and invitational spaces as a way to speak about God's grace. When I think about life as a house and how these structures act as reminders and images of God's grace, I go back to long ago when I was a young boy and we would visit my grandparents who live in St. Marks, Florida, or lived in St. Marks, Florida, which is just south of Tallahassee. And it's a small, tiny little town. When I was there as a young boy, it's less than 500 people lived in St. Marks. And it's a rural little town, and it only had two or three paved roads, no lights to speak of, and just a few little stores. And it was there on the banks of the St. Marks and Wakulla River. And that's where my grandfather was born and raised, and he built his house there on the same property in the house next to the house that he was born and raised in. But when I was this young boy, my parents would drive down to St. Marks and visit with my grandparents. And as I remember driving down that little dirt road that that they lived off of, it was that white sandy dirt from looks like limestone, and it always feels damp when I'm walking around on my bare feet. And then we would drive down this little road and turn off into their front lawn, and their front lawn was that was just covered with that broad leaf St. Augustine grass and this huge oak tree that just cast an enormous cooling shade over the front lawn and over the house. And when we pulled in, you would see this little narrow cottage, barely two rooms wide, and spanning across the narrow cottage is this screen porch. Well, walking down this concrete pathway to the front porch were two little steps. The house was 2.5 to 3 feet high off the ground. And then we would walk up those steps and pull the screen door open. It was a wooden screen door with metal screen. And when we would step onto that front porch, and the screen door would slam behind me, making this loud clap, and I can still feel that metal screen, and I can still look down and see that painted gray floor, those plank floors, and some of the knot holes that were still in those floors. And there were on that porch were the four rocking chairs spread across the front porch. On the wall of the little cottage was two sets of antlers that were guarding the front door. And I just remember walking onto that porch, usually to greet my grandparents, Mr. Bill or Mr. William, as he was called, and his wife, my grandmother, Allie Mae. And they were sitting out there. He was smoking a pipe or cigarettes and drinking coffee, no matter the time of day. And I can still hear the creaking of those rocking chairs, and I can see the smile and smell the cigarette smoke and smell the marsh blowing in off from the river. And I can hear him laugh. I can hear him cackle. And I can hear all these incredible stories. Amazing and fantastic stories that he wove on that front porch. When I would hear them, I would ask my parents, is that true? Did that really happen? And the only answer, the best answer they could give is, well, he said it did. You just never knew. They were just so fantastic. Stories about hunting and fishing and being in the rivers and the shoals and the flats and in the deep water, being on tugboats and barges and being in the woods and seeing geese fill the sky to the point that the sun was darkened. It was just so fantastic to be able to sit on those concrete steps, or to pull out the ottoman from inside and to sit on that ottoman and just be a part of the experience on that front porch. And when people would drive by or they would walk past, they would inevitably pause long enough to wave and say hello, or possibly even drive in or walk up and join the conversation for a spell. Perhaps have a cup of coffee and share more stories. That's the way the front porch operates. It's welcoming. It's comfortable. It's an invitation. And it's transitional from the outside to the inside. And before you ever knew what happens on the inside of that cottage, you knew something great was going on the outside. Well, when you walk through that front door and you step into the cool and the dark of that little cottage, you walk right into the living room and it's green carpet, and there was a couple of reclining chairs and a sofa and an ottoman and maybe another sitting chair and a TV. And I remember a couple of pictures that were on the wall. They were of hunting dogs, and they were the kind of the old pictures from the 60s perhaps, and they were kind of puffy. They were material, and they were filled with some kind of stuffing, and those were on the wall. And the little air conditioner, this window air conditioner unit was just working hard to blow out this ice cold air, and it always felt nice and comfortable and so cool in that little room. And it was in that space that my grandfather would sit in his recliner and read the newspaper, smoke his pipe, drink coffee, watch the news, and we would laugh and smile with Minnie Pearl on the old Grand Ole Opry, or watch Lawrence Welk show or the news, and would just hear stories and learn life lessons in this space. A space that was warm and welcoming, a space that was educational in ways that I still may never be able to fully describe. Even as I don't remember all of the stories, I remember many of the lessons, and I remember the experience, and I cherish those moments. Because in that space, in that little, comfortable, livable space, I knew I had a place. I knew there, and among those people in my family, I was loved deeply, that I belonged in this space. And from the moment I walked from the front porch and into that room, crossing that threshold, I belonged. And I knew it. And then as you walk past the living room, past those little recliners, you would passing a little doorway, and there was the kitchen, and next to the kitchen was the master bedroom, and it was that little galley kitchen that some of the finest fried chicken I have ever put in my mouth was cooked. Some of the best vegetables, the peas and the okra and the potatoes. Oh, I just can't even, I can't fully describe to you the experience of being in that kitchen, to be able to smell what was cooking, to hear the chatter and the clanging of dishes and the stirring of pots. What an experience. And then to sit at this little table, this old wooden oak table, and to share that meal with my family, those who love me and those whom I love, and share life together. To speak of desires and dreams together. To learn lessons together. That's life in the interior rooms, those interior spaces. At night, St. Mark's was peaceful and quiet, dark. And other than the sound of frogs and crickets and the occasional howling hound, there wasn't any sound in St. Mark's. And it was in the cool of the evening, in the quiet of the evening, that we would lie in our beds with this fluorescent desk lamp over the bookshelf of the headboards of our beds, that we would read True West stories or True Detective stories, frontier tales, and passages from the Bible. It's in those interior spaces that life becomes more about transforming than transitional. As we transition from the outside to the inside by going onto the porch and then transitioning from the front porch into the interior through the threshold of the front door, what happens in our faithful life, this life as a house, is that our minds and our bodies and our spirits are transformed. What happens there? What is revealed there? In our finding place and belonging there, as God continues to reveal more about God's self in those interior spaces. I invite us through this series to consider the interior spaces of our faith, our life as a house. And when we begin to think about these interior spaces, we're thinking about sanctifying grace, God's work on our life to transform us, to make us, to lead us into be a more perfectly human, to be as we were created to be, transformed from an old life to the new life, transformed from what is to what should be, and by the grace of God, what can be. That is sanctifying grace. It's God working with us and our responding to God, God's initial acts, to not only bring us to attention through prevenient grace, and not only to respond and to find ourselves justified and having a sense of belonging into the house, but finding ourselves working with God to be transformed. God's grace working and initiating more work from us, more response from us, to be more loving, to be more faithful. Paul speaks well of what this life looks like, this sanctified life, this life that is about perfection, this faithful life together. Hear now these words from Paul. In Romans 12, as Kristen read earlier, we can read in Romans 12, 2, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. Let love be genuine." These are challenging words and descriptions of the faithful life. And left to our own devices, we would never attain them. But by responding to God's grace and God's work upon our lives in these inner spaces, in these inner rooms, we can and we will. We will grow in our life. We will transform to be more perfectly loving. So the challenge today is seeing life as a house. My grandfather built his house on his family's property, next door to where he was born and where he was raised. He built it with the roof line pointing to the North Star. He built it in such a way that it served his family. It was warm, it was secure, and it was welcoming. Today, the house still stands after some 90 years. Through countless storms, a couple of additions and renovations. My grandfather understood in the course of his life what it means to build a house on a rock. As Matthew 7 reminds us, "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. My grandfather built his house on a firm foundation, and more than that, he found his life with the grace of God. Today, my grandfather and my grandmother are buried in the corner lot of the St. Mark's City Cemetery, literally a stone's throw from the front porch of his house. To me, this reminds me that in life, the grace of God goes before us, justifies us to belong, that we might be sanctified, and even in death, we are never out of view of God's grace and love. And for that, I give thanks to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.